Alrighty, this is, for the record, Taylor Farrell with George Spanos at 8:47 p.m. Now, do you have any questions before we begin this interview in earnest?
No, I'm ready to go.
Alrighty. So, first question, how long have you lived and worked in the Chicago area, suburbs, so forth?
I was born in the south suburbs. I am originally from Crete, Illinois, which is a south suburb. It's roughly 35 miles south of Chicago. Mm-hmm. As far as work goes, my grandparents went back into business with their family entertainment center back in 2007. And originally I was just a manager there and pretty much did a lot of grunt work. I used to work alongside some of the guys that worked for us back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually the second year that they opened up their big game room, and they needed somebody to be a game technician. So the way it was presented to me was randomly one night my grandma just goes, "You're gonna fix the games," and I'm like, "Oh, okay." You know, I come from, at the time, you know, it was like an exclusive computer background, so I didn't know the first thing about, you know, servicing games or anything like that. And as it just so turned out, they bought like 60 games from a location that closed, and roughly half of them didn't work. So, you know, I was instructed, you know, they moved all the games into the big arcade, and I was instructed to go over there and just, you know, plug them in one by one, you know, and see what we got. And I got about like 10 games in, and we'll just say like 7 of them like did not work right at all, and I'm just like, wow, this is pretty discouraging, you know. And the thing that was so horrible about it was I didn't know the first thing about how to fix it, you know. So I went back to my grandpa and I just said, listen, at least half of the games over there don't work, and I don't know how to fix these, so what do we do? And he had a Rolodex that was like legendary. I mean, you could go to him and tell him, like, I need such and such person to do such and such thing, and he'll just flip through that thing and he has someone in there. But as it just so turned out, he contacted a friend of his, and he knew a guy, you know, and he, you know, they bring that guy in. And my grandpa, we were at an auction the year before, and he actually hooked up with the technician at that place that closed down. He took down his info, and he called him in, too. So I got these two guys, they come in, and he goes to me. He's like, all right, now you need to go over there, and you need to watch those guys, and you need to see how they do it, you know. So I'm like, oh, okay, I can do that. I was going to do that anyway, you know, because I was interested in it. I really wanted to learn how to do it. So fast forward 6 years, that's what I do exclusively. I do that at a variety of locations.
Mm-hmm.
So
what exactly is your current profession?
Current profession, I am indeed a game technician.
Okay. So is that, do you just go around and fix old machines? Is that the entirety of what a game technician does?
I fix all kinds of games. I actually enjoy fixing all kinds. I mean, there's ticket redemption. You know, that's the ones where you play them, you win tickets, and then you redeem the tickets for prizes. And then there's video games,
mm-hmm.
which is what I grew up around. You know, when I was little, that was, you know, that's all we really had back then. I mean, as far as like ticket games back then, it was skee ball. That was it. You know, but you know, so it's both old and new equipment. I mean, current equipment. You know, I do that at locations, you know, like actual game rooms. I do that at those. I do them at classic arcades, you know, the ones that have the old video games.
Yeah.
And then other places that I work, I go through equipment that they bring in. I fix it, you know, get it to working condition, and they turn it around and then sell it to other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is your first coin-op arcade video game experience in your life?
My first coin-operated video game experience pretty much happened, like, I'm going to say is the instant I was born. because my mom actually worked in my grandparents' grocery store, and in the grocery store, they actually had video games in there. They had a couple of the sit-down games, you know, the actual cockpit games. Yep. I don't know if you've ever seen those before, but they had those over by the checkout counters, believe it or not. They had the Vector Star Wars, and then they had Sinistar, which is one of the early, you know, talking games. I remember that game used to scare the crap out of me. But pretty much, I mean, if I go to, like, Galloping Ghost Arcade or Underground Retrocade, you know, those are classic arcades. If I go to those places, like, I'll post a Facebook status where I'll be like, okay, I'm in my natural habitat now. You know, that's just because that's where I came from, you know. I was around that setting, like, every day of my life when I was little.
Hmm. So why did you ultimately decide to stay involved with CoinOp and be a game technician?
After my grandparents both passed, that was when their business, you know, got passed through the estate, you know, and my dad and my uncle, they had, like, different ideas for what they wanted to do with it. So my wife and I, we left. Mm-hmm. And then once I was on the outside, you know, I just asked her one night. I was like, you know, what do I do here? I mean, do I keep fixing games or do I jump into something different? You know, and she just said, you know, you do whatever you feel is right, you know. And so I just started calling up a bunch of locations, you know, and I'm, you know, you're looking for a game technician, and one of them actually responded. They told me to come on down, so I did that. You know, I come down and fixed some of their stuff, and the guy was impressed enough that he hired me on, like, right on the spot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't really intend on doing it long term. You know, at the time, I was just looking for a new job, you know, because I went from, you know, working in our place 7 days a week to having absolutely nothing. So, you know, I needed
something.
I needed something, you know, so that's what I did. And, you know, I really enjoy doing it. That's why, over this past summer, I actually was working an IT job. And every single day, I was just like, you know, this just isn't the same, you know, and I just really just wanted to go back to doing what I was doing. I want to go back to fixing games because I like the challenge that's presented there. And finally, I just came out and I was like, okay, this isn't working out here. And, you know, a few weeks later, okay, now I'm back to fixing games again full time. So, you know, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it because, you know, it's stuff that I've been around, like, my whole life, you know, so.
So, what would you say your typical day of work looks like, if there is a typical day of work?
Typical day of work for me, it varies depending on, you know, where I'm working out of. You know, it'll either be in a game room setting, or it'll be a warehouse setting, or, you know, wherever. And if I go into a game room setting, typically what'll happen is the owner will come to me and he'll, you know, he'll say, like, okay, such and such games are down. You know, can you go look at those first?
Yes.
So that's what, you know, that's what I do. I go after the stuff that's completely down to bring it back. And, you know, usually I'm pretty successful, you know, wherever I go. I'm on kind of a hot streak the last couple of weeks. I'm pretty excited about that. But but today, for instance, you know, I was working out of the warehouse. Kind of a similar premise. The guy just said, like, okay, you know, I want you to plug this game in and tell me what happens. You know, one of them was a gun game. He wanted me to plug it in. He wanted to see if it coined up on both sides and if, you know, all the buttons work and if the guns work. And incidentally, this game had the guns that had, like, the, you know, the recoil in them, like kind of like Time Crisis.
Yes, yes. I have seen
yes. This had the recoil that actually worked. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, but that's what I was doing today. I was cleaning up the games, getting them ready, you know, for them to move them, you know, to sell them and put them out on the street or, you know, whichever, you know.
So how structured is your work schedule? Is it do you work the same places each week, or is it kind of just whichever falls your way?
As far as my work schedule goes, typically what happens is people will either text me or they'll call me and they'll be like, George, we need your help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I'll respond back. I'll either call them or text them or whichever, you know, and I'll be like, okay, you know, let me see what I got going on right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, I wish there was some kind of, like, set schedule where I could go to a you know, go somewhere, you know, to make it out there at least once a week or something like that. But that doesn't always happen. You know, I got one of my locations, it seems like I get there, like, every 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, all this other stuff comes up. And I work freelance, so my schedule is pretty much dictated by myself. You know, if I wake up one day and I'm like, well, I don't feel like going to work today, you know, I could do that if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, then I'm like, well, you know, I left all that money on the table, you know. So I try not to do that very too often.
So how many hours do you work during the week on average?
The amount of hours that I work in a week varies. I mean, it's a full-time job, so I'm putting in at least 40 hours doing it. It comes down to, because a lot of the locations that I work out of, I have to travel pretty far. I have to, you know, it's like a 100-mile round trip.
Oh, dear.
So when I get out there, you know, I mean, if it's going to take me all day, you know, like 10 hours or something like that, I'll do it, you know, because I'm there, you know, we'll make it happen while I can, mm-hmm. you know. But I got this other warehouse job. I mean, it's right over in Elk Grove Village, which is probably about 13 miles from me. You know, the big difference.
Yeah.
So, they work kind of a different schedule from, you know, all my other jobs. Most of my other jobs, I mean, you know, I'm on location while they're open, so it's more like a second shift kind of thing, about like 2 to 10, you know, something like that. Well, these guys, they work 6 to 2, 6 in the morning, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to roll in there at 6 in the morning. That ain't happening, you know. So I only work like a few hours there, you know, but by comparison, I mean, what I was doing back home at Crete, I was probably working like anywhere between 60 to 80 hours a week. I was working 7 days a week.
Mm.
And, you know, I was pretty wore out that last season. So, you know, once I got out of that, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that again. I mean, I really wish I could work 7 days a week like I used to, but, you know, it's a different monster now, you know.
This is actually what I was going to ask next is, how do you feel about how much you're working during the week? Would you like to work more if you could, or work less, or is it about right for what you think right now?
As far as the amount of hours that I work in a week, ideally, I wish that physically I could work more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the more I work, that's the more money in my pocket, you know? I think everyone aspires to do that, but... I don't really know any other way to break it down outside of that. That, you know, I mean, I wish I could physically go, like, 7 days a week again. I wish I could do that. But the difference is, I think, is there's so much more travel involved with how I do it now versus, you know, before in Crete, I was going to the same place every day, you know. So I want to say maybe it's the travel that takes a little bit out of me. But I definitely try to work at least 5 days a week. And, you know, the other side of it, you know, I enjoy helping people out. So I try to get out to as many locations as I can. But, you know, sometimes, you know, my personal life kind of gets in the way at times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, this past weekend, for instance, yeah, I would have loved to work Saturday or Sunday. But, you know, we had other plans for, like, family gatherings and stuff like that. You know, that comes up. And plus, you know, this time of year with the holidays and stuff like that, yeah, I'm going to be missing some days there, too. So,
so what are your biggest daily concerns, or what are the biggest concerns when you walk into a job for the first time?
For, the very first time? Like, I've never been there before?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, I've done that a few times. If I ever go into a location for the very first time, probably the first thing that I do, I like to go in and I like to scan the floor. I like to look at what equipment they have. You know, if I see some stuff where it's like, okay, I have familiarity with that, or wow, I've never seen that before. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of what I do is based on past experience. You know, if I work on... typically, you know, the games are pretty similar by manufacturer. So, like, if you work on a few games by one company, you know, you pretty much have a pretty good idea of what to expect going into, like, let's say, a game that I've never worked on before, but it's made by that same company, you know? I have a pretty good idea of what's going on, you know? But there's other instances where I go into a location and it's like, okay. We'll take the first job that I took since Crete. Back home in Crete, you know, we had a lot of older games. And I had to make those older games appear fresh. I had to make them work, you know, kind of thing. And now I go into this other place where they actually had a budget to, like, you know, buy all kinds of new games, you know. And it's stuff that I've never even messed with before. But I'll tell you what, you know, within about, like, 2 weeks, I had that place, like, pretty locked down tight. You know, I had a pretty good grasp on, you know, what was going on. And that's just, I don't really know what to chalk that up to, but I'm sure there's some kind of, like, past experience I got there that, you know, made that all click. But yeah, I mean, probably my biggest concern when going into a new location is, you know, what is my extent of my familiarity with the equipment, you know? Because that'll definitely help me to do my job better. Mm-hmm. You know, if I know exactly what I'm up against.
So, do you have any concerns, or what do you worry about when you walk into a place that you've been to before several times, or even regularly work at?
Okay, my concerns with locations that I've been to, probably concern number one would be, okay, that thing that I fixed last week, did that hold up? probably about 99 times out of 100 it holds up, but for me, I like to have as much equipment running as humanly possible, and the reason for that is, you know, when you have equipment that's down, those are like revenue streams that aren't going to be able to generate money. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when I was running my own location, you know, it was like priority number one to have as much stuff running as humanly possible. And another reason for that is, you know, our competition back then, you know, they had kind of a reputation that their stuff didn't work. Mm-hmm. So when people would come into our place and they see like, oh, hey, you know, their stuff works, you know, that looks good on us. And that'll probably, you know, that'll probably get us some repeat business, you know. So typically, you know, locations that I go through, I mean, if I go through all the games, you know, they seem to run pretty decent. I got one location I go there like every 2-3 weeks, you know. I'll be out of the game for like 3 weeks, but when I come back, you know, they'll probably only have like, you know, one or two games down, you know, and they get a lot of traffic in that place. So in my opinion, that's, you know, a testament to how good their stuff is, you know. So otherwise, you know, I've seen other places where, you know, they got some older stuff, like we used to have, where, you know, you got like 6 or 7 that are down. There's like a certain percentage that you want to have up. I can't remember the exact number offhand, but, you know, once it dips below a certain point, okay, now that's cause for concern. But, you know, back home, I had the flexibility, you know, if I really wanted to, I could stay there until like 3-4 o'clock in the morning fixing stuff. I don't have that luxury now because I'm not, you know, I'm not an operator anymore. So I have to work within other people's hours.
So how has your work changed since you started fixing games, or is it stayed relatively stable?
Oh boy. Probably the biggest difference in my job as far as it changing probably has more to do with, you know, back home there's a lot of older equipment. Mm-hmm. And I worked on it enough that, you know, I had it pretty much mastered. But now I go to these other locations where it's like all brand new stuff. You know, now, you know, that's adding a few new wrinkles into the equation. You know, it's different dynamics and stuff like that. It's almost like you gotta like learn or relearn how to do your job. You know, that's probably the biggest change. But once I start going through the stuff and building up the, you know, building up all these new experiences, you know, the next go around when I go to work on the stuff, you know, I'll know better this time than I did, you know, the first time that I did it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, as far as like things that change. I mean, I'm always encountering new equipment out in the field, you know, every time I go out to work. you know, there's a lot of times, I used to be a route technician for Namco Entertainment. I was probably, with the route manager that I worked with, you know, we probably had like 20, 25 locations, just the two of us, you know? And yeah, some of the stuff's similar, but some of them have unique stuff. And, you know, I was very successful with that job. I don't think it was really much of an expectation for us to, like, fix the stuff in the field because, you know, if need be, you know, we could just, you know, pull some circuit boards out, box them up, and bring them back, you know, to the home office. And they got, like, a whole full tech department there that, you know, can go through that kind of stuff. But, you know, I figured let's cut out the middleman. I mean, if I can, you know, if I can handle this out in the field right now, you know, I'll do that.
Okay. So how different are all these machines? Do they vary from company to company, or even within the specific company, are the machines vastly different on the inside?
As far as the internals of, you know, your average video game, they all pretty much have the same kind of equipment inside them. You know, you're going to have a display that's either going to be a CRT monitor, you know, like an old tube style TV kind of thing, or it's going to be like a flat panel LCD.
Okay.
Really just depends on, you know, when it was made. You know, everything now is all LCD, but all the old classic games, you know, those were all, you know, tube displays. But, you know, you're going to have some type of a power supply in there. You're going to have like a main logic board, and depending on how far back you go, you'll probably have like a soundboard, or maybe even an input board. You know, the board that all the controls connect to.
Okay. Yes.
So, I take for instance, you know, you got like a classic game like a Defender, right?
Yes.
In there, you're gonna have what's called an MPU board. Or a CPU board, whatever you want to call it. You're going to have a ROM board, which is going to be the board that contains all the, you know, the game data, right?
Yes.
Which is going to be like your program code and your graphics. Then there's going to be a sound board, which is the board that, you know, processes all the sounds, and that will have its own ROM storage too. Like all the sound samples will be contained in data that's on that board.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an input board, which is what all your controls hook up to.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one actually had a power supply board, very much like how pinball machines had back then.
Yeah.
Actually, pinball machines still have them, but, you know, so you think about it. I mean, that game had like five boards in it, you know, and then you get a little more modern, probably like late 80s, early 90s from that point forward, you know, now it's just like one board, you know, it's going to have all your CPU. It's going to have your data. It's going to have your sound hardware, you know, and all the inputs and all that. Those actually, from like the late 80s onwards had their own, wiring standard, which is called the JAMA standard.
Okay.
Which means you could basically take one JAMA game out and plug another JAMA game in, and it's totally compatible with that cabinet.
Okay.
Whereas before, which was, you know, back in my time when I was a little kid, you know, if a game, let's say a Pac-Man, for instance, okay, let's say that stopped earning money and they wanted to turn it into something else, they would literally have to strip all the wiring and all the boards and everything out of the cabinet and put new wiring and new boards in.
So you just have to completely replace the entire thing?
Correct, because a Pac-Man or like a Midway game is not going to be pin compatible with, say, a Williams or a Konami game. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They all had like unique pinouts and standards back then, but one day someone just decided, hey, yeah, actually it was Namco that created the JAMA standard, or they in the very least, they like they pushed very strongly for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now, I mean, if you wanted to convert a game, you know, it's as simple as, okay, we pop that board out, we put a new one in, you know. Maybe we got to drill some holes in the control panel or something like that, but, you know, they were all pretty much, like, you know, easily replaceable by that point.
Mm-hmm. So it really seems they just vary with how old they are.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a debate as to what, you know, like, what the first JAMA game was and stuff like that, you know. I mean, Sega, for instance, actually did not adopt the JAMA standard for, like, the longest time. There was, like, I think one board set type where they did, and I think they did it exclusively for they were called kits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you buy a video game kit, that's all the stuff that you can just take and just plug into, you know, another JAMA compatible cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Sega had the one type that was called the STV, which was actually like the arcade variant of the Sega Saturn. And that was actually a JAMA board set. And, you know, but other than that, I mean, Sega had, like, all unique stuff. They did everything differently. It was all proprietary. They were, like, probably one of, if not the only company that was left that, like, never adopted. That's the JAMA standard.
Mm-hmm. So do you know if it took long for other companies to start adopting the standard, or did it just kind of all happen relatively the same time?
Well, JAMA actually stands for Japan Amusement Machinery Manufacturers Association. So a lot of the Japanese companies at the time, I guess, you know, they jumped on it first, and then, you know, then the American companies followed.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, it started in Japan, and Sega's a Japanese company, and they're like, yeah, we're not going to do that. To my understanding, it was like a big rivalry between them and Namco, who, you know, was the company that was, like, pushing so strongly for it. And that's just kind of how the pieces fell there, I guess. So.
All right. Moving back to more about your job overall, what skills would someone need to do your job?
okay. If anyone aspired to be a game technician, there's a select set of skills that they need to be familiar with in order to not just do their job effectively, but, I mean, to do it at all. You definitely should acquire, you know, as much knowledge as humanly possible about how the whole setup works. You know, in particular, my philosophy, I go from the power supply on out, okay? What that means is, you know, if you don't have correct power operating, you know, all the, you know, the circuit boards and stuff like that, you know, if you don't have that, chances are it's not going to work right.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know how to, you know, do voltage measurements. You need to know what a diode and a resistor and a capacitor are. You need to know what all that stuff is. Because, I mean, a lot of times, usually comes down to, okay, this part went bad, so now I need a replacement, you know. And, well, how do you install that replacement? Well, sometimes it just plugs in, you know, and other times you have to solder it in. So I would strongly encourage that, you know, you have pretty good soldering skills, which means, you know, you have to You have to understand how to solder. You need to know how to desolder. Personally, you know, I used to fix go-karts and stuff like that before I got into this. So, you know, I had pretty good, you know, decent enough, like, mechanical skills. You know, there's a lot of times, you know, in my line of work, you know, I'm, you know, it's all screwdrivers and, you know, sockets and ratchets and wrenches and stuff like that, you know, and a lot of games will have a variety of, like, security screws and stuff like that. That's just so that, you know, you don't walk in with, like, a Phillips screwdriver and take the game apart, you know? So, they have that. So, I mean, in addition to the skills, you need the tools, too. You know? So I got, like, a security bit set specifically for that. You know, I got a whole set of, you know, standard and metric sockets. And, you know, I mean, part of the name of the game is being prepared, you know, so, you know, you don't want to get, like, stuck on an island in this line of work, you know, you don't want to go, you don't want to go to the operator and be like, oh, hey, you know, I can't fix this, you know, I never do that, you know, I always find a way. I mean, another great skill to have is to be creative. You got to be able to, like, think outside the box at times. You know, because sometimes some repairs, I mean, they're pretty straightforward. It's simple as, okay, I take this out, I put this in. You know, but there's other times where, you know, you have to, like, think beyond that.
Would you say there's a lot of problem-solving skills needed? Because it seems like when you see a machine for the first time, you have to first figure out how it would even work before you can even start fixing it.
Right. yeah, you need to know a troubleshooting process. You know, it's a little, you know, if this happens, then what do I do? You know, is it a problem with the wiring? Is it a problem with the solder work? Is it, you know, is it a bad part? You know, you have to understand how all of that works. Otherwise, you know, you're just gonna run around in circles. And, you know, I've been in that position before where it's like, you know, real foreign stuff that I've never worked on before. And, you know, I'll be like, you know what, I'm gonna take a break from this right now. I'm gonna go move on to something else, you know, and I'll do that something else. And then all of a sudden, like, the idea pops in your head, then you're like, oh, hey, I figured out how to do it. And then you go back, you do it, you know. You know, there's a lot of challenges with the job, you know. There's certain games where, you know, I have literally taken them completely apart just to understand how it works, and then I put it all back together again, you know, and maybe if I'm lucky it'll work better than it did before, you know. you know, but sometimes that's the approach I take to it, you know, and sometimes it's as simple as, you know, I disconnect all these things and, you know, I pull all the boards out and then, you know, you press down on all the socketed components and then you put the boards back in, you hook everything back up. Oh, hey, look, now magically it works, you know. Because sometimes it's as simple as reseating, you know, connections and stuff like that. It's just like a computer that doesn't boot, you know. Like, what's one of the first things that you should try doing? Well, maybe reseat the RAM, you know. That's probably a lot of where, you know, the troubleshooting theory, you know, that I know and understand, that's probably where it all came from, you know, from working with computers, because there's a lot of dynamics there. You know, it's all kinds of different pieces of hardware and, you know, stuff like that, you know. Problem ABC could be caused by, you know, part XYZ, you know. And sometimes you have to take a part out, put a different one in, or, you know, what we'll suggest is, like, hey, if you have it available to you, you know, put in something that is known working, which means you know that it works.
Yeah.
And that way you can test that against, you know, wiring issues or something like that, or connections. As a matter of fact, I mean, I was working on a a crane machine at a location last week. A mouse chewed through, like, all the wiring in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what do you do? Well, and then you replace the chewed up wiring, or, you know. I mean, all kinds of strange stuff can happen. You know, some of it, it's like, how did that happen? Well, sometimes it doesn't really matter how it happened. What really matters is that you make it work, right?
Yeah. So, what do you think is your favorite part of your job?
Favorite part of my job? Give me 1 second here. Okay. Favorite part of my job? You gonna play this thing in its entirety? Just out of curiosity.
No, we're gonna edit down parts.
Okay. How do you take, like, hours of material and put it into, like, 3 minutes? How do you do that?
Very carefully going over and trying to find the perfect spot to pull from.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that with video, because, I mean, I did video editing. I know what it was like to take, like, you know, all this footage, and it's like, okay, how do I, you know. I want to say the rule there was, it's like, you know, it takes, like, 10 hours to edit 1 minute. So, wow, okay. Anyway, now that you can chop that out. Oh, I think the favorite part of my job is all of the challenges that it offers. You know, every location that I go to and the equipment that I, you know, go through, you know, it's a different experience every time. I mean, there's a lot of times where, you know, I'll go in and I'll probably do, like, the same repair because it's, like, a part that commonly fails or something like that. And, you know, it's different every time because, you know, as you move along, the more experience that you obtain, you know, you come up with different ways for how to do it, you know. If I do the same thing like 10 times, you know, I'm probably going to get a little more efficient each time I do it, you know, versus the very first time I did it. And, I mean, there's that. I like different things too. I like the exposure to, like, you know, new equipment because, like I said, you know, that's a new challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a lot of games, you know, like old video games and stuff like that. When the opportunity arises that I get to work on, you know, like such and such old game, it's just like, man, I always wanted to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from when I was very little, I used to watch the repair guys, like, you know, open up the game, and, you know, when they pop that back door off, that was like going into, like, a whole other world, man. You know? Because it was like, wow, there's all these, like, circuit boards and stuff in here. I wonder what they all do, you know? But now here I am. I'm on the other side. This is what my career is. You know, it's like, okay, I know what all that stuff does now, you know? But I think that a lot of it is just, like, streamlining the process, you know. I can come up with, you know, bigger, better ways for how to fix things. You know, that's a pretty big goal that I have every day that I'd like to fulfill.
Hmm. So what would you say your busiest time of the year is? For you working or just the places you work at, what would be their busiest times of year?
The busiest times of year for my work, really, I mean, like, the entire year is a busy time of the year. I mean, as far as, like, actual locations go, if it's just like an indoor game room setting, busiest time of the year is going to be when the weather's cold, you know, and people are inside. as opposed to the summertime where they're like out traveling, you know, doing whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But because I work in so many different settings, you know, I work in both, you know, a game room and a warehouse, you know. As far as the warehouse goes, I mean, they're always bringing in new equipment that needs to be gone through. And then, you know, when it's ready to go, then they can sell it or they can keep it and put it out on location themselves, you know.
Yes.
So, you know, part of the goal that I had, you know, when I left my family's business was like I wanted like multiple outlets, you know, to work out. You know, I didn't want to just be stuck in one place or two places. You know, I'm in many different places, and you know, the luxury that that affords me is that you know I always consistently have work out there to do.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Is pretty much your work schedule busy-wise the same throughout the year? Is there any slowdown around holidays or the summer months at all?
Well, as far as the holidays go, those are like my only real, true no-work periods. You know, other than that, I mean, I'm always somewhere doing something. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, in the middle of summer, if it's like, you know, like right now, you know, like when it's cold out, you know, I'm always somewhere. You know, one of my bosses, for instance, you know, he just moved out of a warehouse that had no heat. Okay. Now he's got a warehouse that's got heat. You know, he's actually going to put down like carpeting in there and stuff like that, you know? So it's like, okay, now I'll have somewhere to work where I'll have to like freeze my butt off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm afforded all these like different options of places to work out of.
So how do you keep your competitive edge? Like, how do you keep people bringing you back versus other technicians?
What was that? It cut out a little bit.
So how do you keep your competitive edge in the workplace? How do you keep people hiring you back on versus others?
I actually have a lot of repeat business, and I think that a lot of the reason for that is that they're, you know, pretty comfortable with how I do my work. You know, it's like, you know, last year when I got into this thing, or actually it's coming up on almost 2 years ago now, you know, when I got out there and started doing what I do, you know, they took notice, like, right away that, like, you know, he knows what he's doing, and that's our guy. I mean, take, for instance, you know, like, when I was out of it for a little bit, I only worked that IT job for, like, 2 months. Mm. But in that two-month span, I still had people calling me, and they're like, George, you know, whenever you get a chance, you know, come on down, you know. They didn't go out and find any other people to, you know, essentially, like, take my place. They didn't do that, you know. They just, I don't know what it is, but I think that maybe a lot of what has to do with it is the fact that, you know, they know that I operated, you know, a family entertainment center before. So they know that I know what it's like. You know, they know that I know what, like, you know, the demands and the pressures of the business are, you know. I think maybe that has a lot to do with it. Yeah, and, you know, there's just some other places where, like, you know, they never really had any repair personnel, and then, you know, I just spontaneously came along one day, and I'm like, hey, you know what, I can do this too, you know, and I go in and I do it, and, you know, they have real high customer satisfaction, I guess. Most of my business is people that contact me. You know, I probably got about like four or five people each week that are you know, they text me or they call me and they're like, hey, you know, we need you to come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I start, like, you know, rummaging through the schedule in my head, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'll do that on Thursday, you know, or something like that.
So it just seems like, for CoinOp at least, if you do your job well, you're going to get brought back.
Yeah, I mean, I've had other locations where I come out, you know, I do what I gotta do, and then for whatever reason, they, you know, they didn't like what I had to offer or something, you know. I don't know how or why or what I did wrong or whatever, but, you know, it's just, I think that shows how strongly, you know, the people that keep calling me back, you know, that shows, like, the, you know, the kind of impression that I put on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it's not like I cast, like, a Jedi mind trick on him or something like that. You know, you better call me back, you know. It's definitely, you know, your job performance has, but that's with any job, you know. But I think it, in particular with this one, you know, there's just really not that many people in the industry that do what I do. You know, I hear that from people that do the same job as me. I hear it from people that don't do the same job as me. You know, that's just like the overall impression that, you know, there's a limited number of, you know, game technicians out there. So I think maybe that could have another factor in it too. You know, they found their guy. He came out. He made it happen. We're just going to stick with him, you know.
Alrighty, that just about catches us up to the second half, and we do have that section, thankfully.
Cool.
So, I think that'll be all. Thanks for doing this again, and taking time to deal with us a little more.
Nah, you're okay, man. Anything to help you out, you know, that's what I do. I help people out.
Alrighty.
We should do some other project sometime.
Yeah. If I'm doing anything else that even comes close to this, I'll call you back up. But this is actually one of my last humanity classes, so I don't know how much more I'm going to be doing.
How big is the curriculum as far as, like, you know, like video games and stuff like that there?
I don't even know, to be honest. It's